everybody. Welcome to Radio KAL Live, brought to you by SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. My name is Steve Yunus. In this, our September 5th, 2017 show, we're going to be covering a range of topics, including some stuff about the abandoned Justice League Mortal film. We're going to be talking about some casting news for the Supergirl Season 3. And we'll also be opening the line to take your questions and comments on any particular Superman, Supergirl, or Justice League topic you would like to discuss. And to let you know how all that works and how you can get involved in tonight's show, let me introduce you to my co-host, the under-the-weather Mike Bailey. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Steve. Now, obviously, the live listeners have gone on to www.supermanhomepage.com/live because they're listening to the show. There they're going to find a phone number, which is 714-242-6186. That's 714-242-6186. There they will be warmly greeted by me, then eventually talking to us about halfway through the episode. Now, since this is 2017, we're beaming this live across the internet, and therefore around the planet Houston, you can call in via Skype. And to do that, you can use the little Skype icon at the supermanhomepage.com/live page to call and be.
Yep, and don't forget, as always, there is a Flash chat room attached to the bottom of the live listening page you're on right now. So we invite our live listeners to join in there and chat with other listeners. Mike and I will keep an eye on that chat room to react to your comments and questions as the show goes on. But we'd like to hear from you in person. So as Michael said, about the halfway point of tonight's show, feel free to call in or use Skype as Michael has just explained. Let's have a chat about everything and anything Superman related. And a huge thank you to our sponsors and patrons, Tina Murray, Patrick O'Neill, and Stephen Wright. So how are you, Mike? I can hear in your voice that you're a little bit, congested and feeling a little bit off, but glad you could make it onto the show tonight.
Yeah, about halfway through Dragon Con this past weekend, a cold hit me like a freight train. And, you don't get a whole lot of rest during that weekend. So I'm pushing through, though, because, you know, it's important, and I slept too long today to really try to call out, so here I am.
Well, we appreciate you being here, and talking about Dragon Con, sounds like it was a great success for you. You had you were moderating a number of panels and were involved in a number of different things. Give us the rundown. What happened?
Well, the cool thing is that some of the stuff I did this year was actually Superman related, because usually all the things that I talk about don't really pertain to the show. But Friday, one of the people that was moderating the Kevin Sorbo panel had to drop out because of a conflict. So I stepped in and I said I would do it. So I got to meet Kevin, got to spend about 5 minutes with him before we went onto the stage to do the panel. It's a super cool guy, really is. Mm. And somebody asked him in the audience about him being on Supergirl this past season, and apparently they wanted him for 7 episodes. But he was between 2 gigs at that time, so he said he could only commit to 3. He also said he was brought in there to tame Terry Hatcher's character. I don't quite know. He didn't really go into specifics on that, but but apparently that's why he was there. And I asked him, it was the first question while everyone was getting organized for the questions, I asked him about auditioning for Lois and Clark. And he told the audience that he was there all the way up through the audition process. He and Dean were the last 2 guys. He got the job, and then 24 hours later was told that they went with Dean Cain anyways. So apparently he wasn't like, it's not like I auditioned for Superman and didn't get it along with a bunch of other guys. Apparently he was like super close to getting the part, and then it was taken away from him. So, but he went on to do Hercules, so I think he did okay with that. But he was, and every time, people bring that up, I look at him and I'm like, would he have dyed his hair black? Would he have worn the contacts? I mean, that would have been interesting to say the least.
Yeah, maybe the last minute they decided there was less work to be done with Dean Cain rather than Kevin Sorbo. But the rest is history, as they say. So that sounds like that was an interesting conversation with him. What else did you get up to?
Well, I moderated We did a viewing of Superman versus the Elite, the animated film based on Action Comics number 775. And after that, we did a me and Tony Barletta, who's the programming director for the comics track for Dragon Con, did a Q&A with Joe Kelly, who wrote that issue in the movie. And he's a super cool guy. I just want to get that out before anything else, because it was really interesting to see somebody who is so open about talking about the project, talking about the original issue, talking about the movie and the changes made to the movie. In that movie, Superman's fighting the Atomic Skull in a couple different scenes. And apparently in the original script, it was supposed to be the Parasite, but for whatever reason, when it went to the animation stage, they changed that. And he wasn't told about it until after the film came out, which he was okay with, because that's just how these things work. Mm. But he talked about, you know, because I was more of the guy that kind of was familiar with his Superman run, I asked him a couple questions about his, you know, the other things he worked on with Superman. He has a really cool vision of who Superman should be. And one of the things that he said that really stuck with me was, because I asked, you know, he made Superman funny. That was one of the hallmarks of his run, is that Superman was actually kind of cracking jokes. And to him, Superman would be a funny guy. He'd be, you know, he wanted to make Superman a guy you'd want to hang out with. And I kind of liked that answer. I also found out he at one point created this new version of General Zod that appeared in the books for about 2 or 3 years. And originally he pitched it as Superman's brother, kind of the cast off of the House of El. And I was just like, and he said that at one point, and we asked a bunch of other questions, and then it suddenly hit me that he actually said that. You know, it's just like, so I'm like, wait a second, he was supposed to be his brother? And that's when he explained that it was his idea, that it would, his original conception was, you're having two brothers, you know, one that was saved and the other that was kind of cast off, and that was where your conflict was. But DC at that time, and you remember this because it was something that was talked about quite a bit, you know, at that time Superman was the only Kryptonian, you know, the only Kryptonian, and that was just not something they were going to undo for that storyline. So he went in a different direction, but, no, really fun guy. The cool thing about the panel and the movie is that there were people there that had seen it. And then there were other people there that had never read the comic and never seen the movie. So, you know, you got kind of a totally different perspective on it from there. But basically he wrote Action Comics 775, because he read in another comic where somebody was just like, you know, where a character was saying, you know, superheroes, you know, they're tarnished, and you can't, you know, they can't be good guys, you know, they can't, you know, they have to kill. And it just made him so angry that he wrote this story called, you know, Whatever Happened to the Truth, Justice, and the American Way. And it has come on to be a classic. Oh, what's so funny about Truth, Justice, the American Way? And I was combining two stories there. So,
you were. That'd be an interesting one.
But he was just angry because he felt that Superman stood for something better, that Superman should stand for something. And then he kind of talked about how certain movies have had Superman do stuff that he doesn't quite agree with, you know, vis-a-vis Man of Steel. But no, super fun time. I got to chat with him a little bit afterwards. I also got to chat with Stephen T. Siegel, who wrote Superman for a little while, because they were both there as part of Man of Action, which is their animation thing.
Yeah.
So, but I did a lot of other stuff. I was on a Batman panel, and I got to talk about RoboCop, and I got to talk about Predator. But really, two of my favorite things were, getting to do my first big celebrity moderation thing and getting to do something Superman related for the con. So they even, because I was an attending professional, they even gave me my own little tent card for the table, which I kept because, you know, it was the first time that it ever happened. But no, super fun time. And I banged on about it enough, so we've got other stuff to talk about tonight. But I was just excited because we actually had Superman stuff going on this year. So that was
very
cool. That's kind of different.
Yeah, so was it the Authority, Mark Miller's Authority, that was the catalyst for that story, the What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, the American Way?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is at the very beginning of the panel, he was just like, you know, allegedly it was based on the Authority, but I can't confirm that. And he would make that joke. He would make that joke throughout. And then at the end, he goes, it was based on the Authority. It was totally based on the Authority. So.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like you had a great time. And it's so impressive that you get to be invited there as a, you know, to run panels and do these kinds of things. So it's fantastic. And it may, as you were telling me off air, eventuate in some special guests here on our Radio KL live show in the future. So we'll keep those under our hat until they eventuate.
All right. So what else we got going on?
Well, we've had a few things happen with the movie side of things. Justice League, we saw back in, what was it, in July at the Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, a Alex Ross-inspired Justice League movie poster. It says, "You can't save the world alone." And those words had the different symbols of the different characters making up some of the letters of that poster. But the imagery itself was, as I said, Alex Ross-inspired. Clay Enos, the photographer, admitted that the poster was inspired by the 2005 comic book series Justice by Alex Ross. And he says, "I used this exact image as my reference for what became the latest Justice League poster. I simply had the idea and took the initiative to pay homage to Alex Ross by making a few quick portraits in that distinctive light. So I'm glad that Warner Brothers marketing team ran with them. I love it." And we got to see the individual photos that make up that poster of Batman, Aquaman, Cyborg, The Flash, and Wonder Woman. And they're pretty cool photos. The lighting is pretty awesome in those photos.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. It was interesting seeing like the different parts individually. Mm. But you know, what I like though is that it's, you know, being inspired by something comic book based. You know, the DC cinematic side has gotten accused on more than one occasion of either taking things from the comics and kind of doing them wrong or not really being that, you know, involved with the comics. And here, you know, an entire marketing thing has been created out of that Alex Ross poster. So I like seeing the behind the scenes stuff on that when it's, you know, positive and not negative.
Indeed. So that was pretty cool to see. Unfortunately, obviously Superman is not part of those images, but nevertheless fun to see those homages and the individual images that make up that poster. And that's all really for the upcoming Justice League movie that we had this week. But as you and I know, and other fans listening will know, that there was an abandoned Justice League that was previously under the helm of George Miller. It was supposedly titled Justice League Mortal and had DJ Katrona as Superman, had Armie Hammer as Batman, Megan Gale as Wonder Woman, and other actors involved in the movie. One of them was Jay Baruchel, who was going to be playing Maxwell Lord. And he recently participated in an interview with MTV's Happy, Sad, Confused podcast, where he had some interesting things to say about the movie and how far it got into pre-production, and production was almost about to happen. Now they all got together, they all traveled to Australia, where obviously George Miller is from, and you know, things were all moving ahead, except the film got canned because of tax incentive cuts and a writer's strike and all these other things that happened that ended up in the movie not going ahead.
Yeah, I was kind of fascinated by his comments. It's still weird to think of that he was cast as Morgan Edge. Maxwell Large. So why do I always confuse those two? Probably because of Supergirl, the TV show. You know, he was cast as Maxwell Lord, and I guess he would have been like a super young Maxwell Lord because he's, you know, he was kind of a young actor at the time and probably more famous now for being one of the voices in How to Train Your Dragon and stuff like that. But his comments, it's like he says, you know, he talks about how, like, the, you know, the designs and everything would have been, you know, super cool. But he goes, all of a sudden, this guy's got Superman as a weapon. And he went on to say, I turn him into full red eye Superman. And there's this big ass fight between him and Wonder Woman where he breaks her bleeping wrists and bleep. The first time you see Wonder Woman in the opening scene on Themyscira, it's just her. It's her on top of a steed, and she's just a half a kilometer away from a Minotaur. And then he talked about how when Maxwell Lord would control somebody's mind in the comics, he got a nosebleed. But apparently, when he takes over Superman's mind, he would have bled out of every orifice in his head. So it sounds like if this film had gone forward, one, it would have been extremely violent towards the end, and two, it would have been kind of a horror show as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, having a nosebleed is one thing, but bleeding out of your ears, your nose, your eyes, your mouth, it's pretty full on. So, yeah, but interesting to hear him talk and, you know, the kind of passion that he has about what could have been, and you know, looking at cast members, while I wasn't a big fan of DJ Katrona as Superman, I mean, who knows, once he got into shape and, you know, got into the costume, and I was a big fan of Megan Gale as Wonder Woman. I thought she would have been fantastic in the part. She's well-known here in Australia as an actress, but more of a model, and definitely has the stature of an Amazonian warrior. But, yeah, it never happened. And if you do want to hear that interview, MTV.com, Happy, Sad, Confused podcast, the discussion about Justice League happens roughly around 42 minutes into the podcast.
All righty.
So, continue.
I was about to say, we got some Supergirl news, too.
We did indeed. Their Entertainment Weekly found out that one of the episodes of Season 3, Episode 6, is going to be titled Midvale, and it's going to have a flashback to an earlier time in Kara and Alex's life when the two were teenagers in Midvale going to high school. There's some, supposedly they're going to go on a road trip back to their childhood hometown, and where when they're there, they'll relive a murder mystery that happened at their high school, and supposedly a story that really shaped their relationship as we know it. So in doing so, in creating that episode, they've had to cast a couple of teenage actresses to play the roles of Kara and Alex at that age. I'm guessing that the previous actress who played a young Kara, maybe not old enough to play her as a high school student. So we now know that Isabella Vidovich is going to be playing a young Kara, and Olivia Nikkanen, from Boardwalk Empire and The Americans, will play young version of Alex Danvers.
Yeah, I was kind of confused why they didn't go with the actresses that are, you know, that were cast as the characters in the pilot.
Mm.
I know later in the seasons they showed more of that scene, but it turned out that that was just extra stuff from the pilot, so it's not like they got them back. I was wondering if maybe they aged out of the roles a little bit in the last couple of years. Like they just don't, they look a little older to play the characters. But I like that they're calling the episode Midvale, since that was the town that, I almost said, the town where Superman abandoned his cousin 30 seconds after she got to Earth. But that's a little snarky. So kind of actually what happened. But I'm kind of interested in that, because when they showed all the stuff in the first season in the pilot of, you know, the Danvers lived like on this beautiful oceanside property, and there was like a beach and all that, and they never actually gave the name of the town. So now I'm wondering, now that they're in Vancouver and they're a couple of seasons away from it, if they're trying to do that whole, you know, well, it was, you know, it was Midvale. So, you know, to kind of tie it more into the comics.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because if there's a beach there, Midvale sounds like a, you know, like a Smallville type town. You wonder if it was coastal or if it's just something that they'll have to kind of retcon to match whatever town she's supposed to be from. But looking at the photos of the two actresses that we've got on the website playing the roles, to me, the Olivia Nikkanen, if that's how you pronounce her surname, looks more like Melissa Benoist than she does, Kyla Lee. But I guess once you get them in the roles and change their hair color and what have you, it'll be different. But just looking at them as is, I would imagine the one on the right to be more Melissa Benoist's younger counterpart than Isabella, who's on the left.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. That's excuse me, I almost started coughing there. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I didn't see it until you pointed it out. Now I can't unsee it.
Sorry, but yeah, we'll wait and see. That's episode 6 of season 3, titled Midvale. And don't forget, Supergirl season 3 premieres on Monday, October 9th at 8 p.m. on the CW. So we're just a little more than a month away from season 3 kicking off, so cannot wait for that. And while we're on TV, yeah, it is not too far away. While we're on the subject of TV stuff, new episodes of Justice League Action continue to air on Cartoon Network at, I think it's 7 a.m. these days on Saturday mornings. And there was a new episode on the weekend that didn't involve Superman, but it was titled The Cube Root. And our reviewer, Mark Lax, who is one of our regular callers on this show, submitted his review of that. He gave it a 3 out of 5. And the episode involved the villain Calculator hacking into Mr. Terrific's T-spheres and also separating Firestorm back into the forms of Ronnie and Martin, Ronnie Raymond and Martin Stein. And it's up to Martin Stein and Mr. Terrific to stop Calculator and set things straight. So that episode aired on Saturday, but there's a new one this Saturday which will involve Superman, and it's titled Superman's Pal, Sid Sharp, which is an interesting one. That'll air on Saturday, September 9th at 7 a.m. And I think the one following that is also next Saturday, the Saturday after, is also a Superman-centric one. So a couple of Superman episodes coming up over the next two Saturdays if you've got Cartoon Network at your house.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad, even though I really don't watch the show, I'm kind of glad that it's finally now cranking out and you're getting it in Australia as well, because I know that was kind of an annoyance there for you for a little while. But I'm tickled at this Superman's pal Sid Sharp. That's just kind of a funny title on its face. So I'm kind of curious about what that's all about.
Yeah, so I'll have to wait for Mark's review after Saturday's episode airs. And don't forget, we do have a regular feature on the Superman homepage titled Superman on TV. Each week we specify and list for you what TV viewing there is for Superman fans on in a particular week for both the US and Australia. So this week, Man of Steel is on TNT. You've got repeat episodes of Supergirl on Monday at 8 p.m. on CW. You've got Superman Returns on TNT also this week. Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice is on HBO2 on Thursday. So there's a whole stuff, list of things happening both in the US and in Australia for fans of Superman.
Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice is on HBO2. It seems like all the time. It seems like every time I go into the kitchen to like make dinner or clean up or whatever, and I'm flipping through the channels, and it's on, either at the very beginning or at the very, very end. So I'm just kind of amused that they keep just showing it and showing it.
So that's what's happening on TV, the TV side of things. So we're going to take a quick break. We're almost at the halfway point of tonight's program. We're going to talk about Action Comics 986, which we didn't get to talk about last week. We're also going to speak about Supergirl Annual Number 1 and some other comic book news that we have in store for tonight's show. So hang around after these messages as we get into the world of comic books. And don't forget, if you do want to be part of tonight's show, our guest call-in number is 714-242-6186. That number again, 714-242-6186. Or you can click on the little Skype icon down next to that guest call-in number to be part of tonight's program, and we will be back after these messages.
What will happen now? We'll know more in a moment when we return for the exciting climax of today's episode. So stand by.
Up in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
No, it's SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. SupermanHomepage.com, covering the world of Superman from the 1930s to today. News, reviews, rumors, and reports. SupermanHomepage.com for all your Superman comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, radio shows, and more. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Man of Steel and more. SupermanHomepage.com.
You're listening to the Radio KAL Live Talkback Show from SupermanHomepage.com.
You know what, gang? I want to talk about your sports equipment. For instance, your bicycle and your baseball bat and glove and your hockey stick and your skate, things like that. Do you have a special place to keep them? A place to throw them when they're not in use so that they're not in the way of the other people in your family? You see, I've just heard about a mighty serious accident that happened to the father of a fellow I know because of carelessness along that line. And I know that you wouldn't want anybody at your house to suffer because you left your things about in the hallway or on the stairs where they can trip people up. So speak to Mom about it today. Ask her to help you find a safe place to store everything of yours that could possibly cause an accident. Oh, and one thing more, gang. Be kind of careful yourself. I mean about rushing around so and running through the house and up and down the stairs. Take it easy. That's the idea. Play safe.
This is John Hames Newton, and you're listening to Radio KAL Live, brought to you by SupermanHomepage.com.
All right, Michael, be careful around the house, okay?
No, my dogs are trying to kill me, so it's okay. we have decided that they're basically teaming up to do this, because they all seem to get underfoot at the least provocation, so maybe they should listen to that. Though I doubt
maybe
they
should.
Superman. They don't listen to me, so whatever.
It's always interesting in those old ads that it's always mom who has to, buy the new Kellogg's pet packets and help you move things around the house. You know, dad's never at home. He's always at work.
Yeah, it's kind of that post-war, women going back into the home type of thing, which is true but isn't true. But, yeah, it's always like mom was the one that was doing the shopping and doing the cleaning and all kinds of stuff. You listen to pep ads in the post-war episodes, and you would think that, like you said, dad is never at home. And that when he is at home, he is in constant danger from his irresponsible children who... Like, what happened? Did this, like, dude break his arm or something? I need a little more information on this, Dan. I just want the whole story.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as I mentioned before the break, we're going to talk about comic book side of things. And as I said last week, we didn't get a chance to talk about Action Comics 986, which is the part two of the Only Human story. And in this one, Lex has been taken over by the Machinist. He's kind of been brainwashed into having to fight Superman. And it's kind of unclear whether or not he's really being forced to at some point. Knowing Lex the way we do, we're not sure whether or not he's... really trying not to fight Superman, or whether or not this is tapping into, one of the darker elements of his psyche, which is probably something he really wants to do. But after the fighting is done, Lex and Superman share a moment, which was a quite interesting portion of the book.
Yeah, I was impressed with this, because usually fill-in stories like this don't really amount to much. And it was kind of set up in the first part of it that this was just going to be, Superman's going to fight Lex, and that's how we're going to kill, a couple of issues until we get to the big Mr. Oz storyline. But not only did we have that nice moment between Lex and Superman at the end of the issue, but you also had him kind of taking on the visage, I guess I should say, of Darkseid when he was going full out. Mm. And then at the end, Mr. Oz shows up, and it leads right into the big storyline that'll be starting next week. So I got to hand it to the Superman people at this point. They really are making these stories. It's like, even if it's just a fill-in, it still counts. And I think that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, it is indeed. Now, at this point in the show, we bring in our good friend and regular caller, Mark Lax, who I'm sure has something to say about this particular episode as well. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks. You're not suffering from a cold, too, are you?
No, I was just eating something, so... Excuse me.
Caught you at a bad moment. Have a
went
drink.
Down the wrong way.
So what did you think of 986 Action Comics?
No, I liked it. And like Mike said, I didn't expect to get any of that Mr. Oz stuff at the end of the story.
Mm.
I think both issues itself, I mean, I guess they were kind of standalone until you kind of got to the end. But it was a good issue. I mean, you know, of course, Superman fighting Lex, of course, they have to do that. They haven't really done that in a long time, but he was brainwashed or whatever. And, the ending with the machinist, I couldn't figure out, did they find whom the machinist was, or were they just brainwashed? I don't know. I was a little confused.
Before he could be captured, I think he makes an escape, so I don't know if his identity was ever revealed to be who he was, but I think they got to the core machinist, whoever the real person was, but because he's always got duplicates, but this seemed to be the real one, but I think he made his escape before he could be captured.
Well, they're making the machinist, you know, bringing him back after his appearance in the, I guess it was Geoff Johns and John Romita Jr., I think, that did that. So, you know, I mean, he could be he seems to be an interesting character. He's interesting in this story. We'll see, you know, I'm sure we'll see him again at some point. But, you know, it ended a bit, you know, with the Mr. Oz stuff. And then next week, because I believe this week is a continuation of the, I guess, Sinestro Parallax or whatever from Superman. And then
I think next week
we get the first... No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's interesting what's going to be happening because we thought that the Mr. Oz story would be kicking off, soon. And we've heard this week that Superman number 31 and number 32... pushing back the Imperious Rex story. Obviously, we're talking about Action Comics here, so I imagine everything's going ahead as planned for that. But with the Superman title, they're inserting, you know, two issues, different stories for Superman number 31 and Superman number 32, written by James Bonney and artist Tyler Kirkham. And it's a new two-part story called Breaking Point about Lois Lane. DC haven't announced what's happening with the Imperious Rex story, whether or not they will be pushed back just to start in later in October, where they're supposed to start September 20th and October 4th, but these two issues will now insert into those two dates. So not sure what's happened there. Michael, any insight or any, you know, ideas as to why the Superman issues may have been pushed back?
Probably just nothing more than something happened with the creative teams and they couldn't get it done in the time period they wanted to get it done in. Because usually lately, if this was like 2007, I would have just said somebody has just completely, you know, missed the boat on this one because, you know, that was the era where they were just late all the time. But I don't think, I think they probably just ran into a problem with scheduling and they needed something to fill it in.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So we're not sure what's happening there and how that'll affect future issues, because DC Comics haven't told us yet, but fans of Superman will get a two-part story involving Lois instead.
I'm sure they'll
Yeah, later on.
I'm sure they'll fix the solicitations, you know, as they come out, because they'll be a little, a little off. Yeah, usually it's just, you know, it's a it seems like another big story as well as the Mr. Oz story. So they're probably, you know, taking a little more care with it. So, you know, they need some more fill-in issues. That's okay, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're anything like the, you know, the one we just had in Action, it should be pretty good. But if it's about,
indeed,
about Lois, I know it'll be good.
Yeah, for sure. Now, this past week we also had Supergirl Annual number one, which was a strange one. For me, annuals used to be kind of a standalone thing. They would carry on what had been happening in the regular issues, but there would be a special story. There would be something, you know, important, so a reason to have an annual. They weren't necessarily just, you know, part of everything else that had been happening. But here we have the Girl of No Tomorrow story, part two. So it's not... I don't understand, why do you have an annual that is a second part to an ongoing story? It feels like...
Did it end?
It feels
in that
like
issue,
it was...
Or...
Yeah, but it felt like it was like part two and three jammed into one annual, because you get more pages, you get 40
right.
pages or whatever it is in an annual. So it's a strange one for me, because to me, annuals had always been something special, something different. But here it's just like, we need to finish off this story, so let's whack it into an annual and shove it in the middle of the schedule.
Yeah. That might have been what it was. They just wanted to finish it up and move on to the... No, really, you know. And, you know, move on to the next thing. I mean, yeah, that is strange that they use an annual as a part two or something. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I remember as a kid, even before the crisis, you know, getting all those annuals. They're all, you know, they're all separate stories and their own story, and, you know, and they were fun, you know. And I mean, I used to like the annuals back in, I guess, the 90s or even early 2000s when DC connected all the... Either you had, you know, they're all Elseworlds or Armageddon 2001. You know, I used to love that too, you know. But now lately, even, you know, some of the annuals I've read with Superman and you know, an Action, they've been fine, but they just haven't been, you know, what I would consider an annual that I used to read.
Yeah, I mean annuals, even back in the 70s and 80s, I think they used to come out with hardcover annuals that would contain... you know, special stories or whatever, but I think they've lost the idea of what an annual, you know, kind of means to people. Michael, what's your recollection of annuals? I mean, are they something that you used to look forward to, or are they, you know, were they just part and parcel of your regular collecting? Well, there he's on mute at the moment, so hopefully he'll repress.
Sorry about that. I had a moment that you guys didn't want to hear there. but no, annuals, I used to look forward to the annuals, especially when I was really starting to pick up the Superman books. You would get, like, you know, some of the stories weren't, you know, all that special, but then you would have, like, the Return of the Newsboy Legion in Superman Annual number 2. And then DC did that through the 90s, had all of the annuals have a common, either be part of a crossover or have like a common theme, like the year one annuals or the Elseworlds annuals. And those could kind of get hit and miss. I wasn't a huge fan of the Legends of the Dead Earth one that summer of 96. It's kind of interesting. I'm surprised that they're continuing to do these annuals now, because it seems like they have annuals come out during the week where, like, it's like a skip week almost, where, you know, they just want to have some kind of product out there, so they release an annual. So I haven't had a chance to pick this up yet because I was away all week, but it sounds like it was a little different than some of the other stories we've been getting lately.
Mm. Now, Alex in the chat room, in regards to the Imperious Rex story or Imperius Lex story or whatever it was that we were just talking about that will get pushed back in the Superman title. He gave me the hint to check out Peter J. Tomasi's Twitter account, and Peter answered a fan's question asking what's happening with that Imperius Lex story. And he says, it's happening. In fact, I saw the finished lettered up version the other day. So I'm guessing it's just been pushed back to happen to start off after those two fill-in issues that we were talking about. So thank you, Alex, in the chat room for heading us, pointing us in the right direction.
Yay, Alex. This is why we have the flash chat.
Yeah, Alex also in the chat room says about annuals, weighs in. He says annuals for him haven't meant anything in a while. It doesn't matter what they were, but what they are now. And with ongoing story arcs, a one-shot annual to the publisher it's a one-shot that the publisher doesn't really care about. So, they do seem to have lost their ways, or the impact, or the what made an annual special has kind of lost its form in recent times, which is a shame. But always good to hear from you, Mark. Always appreciate you calling in. Is there anything else you wanted to leave us with before we send you on your way?
No. I was just going to mention that for The Man Who Had Everything was an annual. That was the, Alan Moore. And
yeah.
That was considered one of the best stories. So it's just interesting that it's not like that anymore. But okay.
No, indeed. Cool, Mark. Thanks for calling in, and always great to chat with you. And love reading your reviews on Justice League Action. Looking forward to this Superman one coming this Saturday.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Okay. Bye.
That was Mark Lax. Now, we also have some comic book news that's interesting this past week. We have the lenticular cover for Doomsday Clock number one, repurposing some art from the Watchmen cover by co-creator Dave Gibbons. What did you make of this one, Michael?
It's kind of cool. I like that the lenticular cover thing is being carried on through all of these books that kind of tie heavily into the overall story of Rebirth. So you have the lenticular covers on the button issues from mm-hmm. Batman and Flash, and then you have it for the Oz Effect covers from Action Comics, and now obviously for the Doomsday Clock. It's neat. I don't think I'll be spending an extra $5 on it, but it is kind of funny to see Rorschach's ink blots form the S, the Wonder Woman symbol, and the bat. It's almost funny actually to see that.
Yeah, so that is the lenticular cover for Doomsday Clock number one, which will be on sale November 22nd, but interesting to see DC Comics release animated versions of that online. And I wonder why they can't do that for the digital versions that we get when we get them from Comixology. I mean, that would be cool to have that effect, because we can't obviously do lenticular on digital, but why not just do an animated GIF or cover or whatever for the digital people? I think I've mentioned that before when we were talking about the Oz Effect lenticular cover, but it's cool to see that these covers, and maybe they want to entice people to buy the print versions to get these lenticular things. Maybe that's the ploy, but while they're a little bit of a gimmick, it's always interesting to get these types of covers, whether it be lenticular covers, embossed covers, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I am kind of curious why they haven't cracked that code yet, but maybe there's just more to doing the animation. Maybe it would affect the size of the file or the type of file for the digital editions, because I get the digital editions of Superman in Action so that I can read them when they come out, as opposed to having to wait till I get to the shop. So I'd kind of appreciate that too, since I buy both ways.
Yeah, exactly. So looking at the comic books coming out this week, Wednesday, September 6th, we have a second printing of Dark Knight's Metal number one, if you're buying that particular comic book. We have a digital comic of Injustice 2, Chapter 22. If you're into the print editions of Injustice 2, issue number 9 is also out this week. Then we have Justice League number 28 and Superman number 30 are out this week. The Superman number 30 comic book continues the Sinestro story with Superman as a Yellow Lantern on the cover there. A pretty cool looking cover with the two of them going head to head. So if you're into that, this a minute longer story continues on in Superman number 30.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how this one wraps up. And I'm liking that cover. The Superman in the Parallax armor is kind of interesting. I'm glad they're only doing it for a very brief period of time, but I really liked the first part, so I'm looking forward to the conclusion.
Yeah, now you were at Dragon Con this past weekend, and there's another convention coming up in a month's time in New York. The New York Comic Con, funnily enough, is a place where we will see a number of exclusives, just like we did see in San Diego. Funko have revealed that their exclusive offerings for New York Comic Con will include a Funko Pop Vinyl Superman figure. And this one caught a lot of interest from the fans that I saw on Facebook. Pop Hero's first appearance, Superman, has the Man of Steel in the costume he wore on the cover of Superman number 1 from 1939. So it's not exactly the first appearance, although, if I recall correctly, and I could be wrong here, Superman number 1 kind of just rehashed or retold some of the Action Comics number 1 panels?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a special, just a one-issue one-off, reprinting the stories from the first four Action Comics issues, but it turned into something bigger. I think that art was repurposed from redone from another panel, but it's still one of those, you know, iconic shots of Superman, you know, that George Perez did a take on and Jim Lee did a take on. But I got to tell you, when I saw the picture of this this Funko Pop, I got a little. I immediately went to Facebook and said, "Look, anybody going to New York Comic Con? I need this. I need this like a lot." Because I actually kind of the Superman Funkos, outside of a few of the Batman ones that I've picked up, are the only ones that I collect, and I really like them. They, you know, there's not much to them because, you know, it's all basically the same body type. They just do different, you know, sculpts around or different paint jobs and such. But the Superman ones that they've put out have been kind of cool. They had a black and white one. They had a new 52. They had a classic. They had a really cool one that Hot Topic put out where it was Clark Kent changing into Superman.
Mm-hmm.
They also did a Blackest Night one, and I like that one because it looks like what I call it, and I joke with my wife about this, I go, that's the Superman going to, like, the 90s industrial club. You know, going to see like Marilyn Manson or Nine Inch Nails or something. So it's the Superman trying to be goth. But I just looked at this and I really liked the way it looked. And I shouldn't, because Funko Pops are of the devil. I cannot tell you how many booths in the dealer's rooms that go on at Dragon Con, how many of those people were just chock full of Funko Pops. And I'm wondering how long these can last, but I like the Superman ones that have come out. They just make me smile.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying the same thing as yourself, asking anyone going to New York Comic Con, you know, please get me one of these, and they are pretty cool. And this one in particular looks really good. I love the spit curl on his forehead. It looks better than some of the other ones I've seen. It'll be available at New York Comic Con, which takes place across October 5th to October 8th at the Javits Center in New York City. So if you're heading across, make sure you head to the Funko Pop stand. So that is pretty cool. And talking about conventions, I hadn't heard of this one before, but Ladies Con 2017 is a convention that's put together by the Ladies of Kamikaze. And it represents an exclusive community devoted to consuming, critiquing, and creating comics and pop culture. And they're teaming up with their home base to bring the second annual Ladies Con to the Armory in Somerville, Massachusetts, on September 16th. Now, why do I mention it? Well, Lois Lane author Gwenda Bond, who has been a special guest on this very show, will be there at this convention, which takes place, as I said, September 16th. If you want more information, then head to ladiescon.com.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that that kind of thing is going on. It seems, you know, it seems that we are in no shortage of comic conventions in this day and age. But it's cool that something like that's coming together, and it only makes sense that somebody who's writing a Lois Lane series of novels for the young adult market would be invited.
Indeed. And if you're into conventions and exhibitions and things like that, and you're in the area of Montana, then Billings, Montana is the location, the Yellowstone Art Museum, for a exhibition titled My Hero, Contemporary Art and Superhero Action, which is currently on display there at the Yellowstone Art Museum. It's a collection of international artworks in a variety of media that celebrates, examines, and re-envisions the lives of iconic superheroes. And the exhibition is open until January 2nd next year. And you can get more information at artmuseum.org.
Yeah, it looks like they have some special programming on the September 9th. You're going to have Geek Out Superhero Saturday. The 28th is the Anti-Hero in Contemporary Comics, a lecture by Dr. Aaron Rosen. And then on, that's just saying that it's going to be remaining open until January 2nd. So I can stop talking now. Great. Yay.
So that convention, as I said, in Billings, Montana, if you're interested in checking that out, it looks like some cool artwork and some sculptures and things like that, that would be pretty cool to check out in person. And that brings us to this time in history, Michael's segment where he tells us, you know, looks back in the annals of history for what happened on this day or in this week in the world of Superman.
Come with me now, my son, as we break through the bounds of your earthly confinement, traveling through time and space.
So sometimes at the beginning of the month, if I go like to 1947 or 1957, I'm not really finding anything Superman related in the comic books that came out just because there weren't as many comic books back then. This time I actually had to go to 1977, which was kind of surprising, where on September 6th, 1977, you had Justice League of America, number 149, which saw the Justice League fighting Dr. Light. And you also had Superman number 318, which has a Lois Lane-looking pirate woman, but it's not her. It has Superman fighting Peg Leg Portia. I just love that name, and I'm not going to really focus on it. Jumping into the time machine and going to 1987. This week, on September 1st, 1987, World of Krypton number 1 came out, which was the first of three miniseries that John Byrne wrote. There was World of Krypton, World of Smallville, and World of Metropolis. And if you want to be technical, the Pocket Universe Superboy appeared in Who's Who Update 87 number 5, which also came out this week. Jumping to 1997, excuse me. I got a little bit more of an option here. The Kents, number 4, which wrapped up the first of the three stories that ran through that miniseries. I really liked the Kents. It was a cool look at the history of the Kent family before, during, and after the Civil War. You also had Steel, number 44, Superman Adventures, number 13, Superman the Man of Steel, number 73, and The Trial of Superman trade paperback, a image that you've gotten a lot of mileage out of whenever they talk about the Superman court case. And in 2007, you had Supergirl number 21 and a trade paperback of Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes, Dominator War. Excuse me, sorry, I couldn't hit mute on that one. On September 5th, George Lazenby, Jor-El, and I want to put quotes around that, in the Superboy TV series, was born in, you're going to have to pronounce that for me, sir.
Queen Bien.
I don't. Queen Bien, okay. New South. I forgot that he was an Aussie. That's, yep. I don't know why
the
I
only
that,
Australian
but,
James Bond.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. But he was born on September 5th in 1939. On September 6th, Justin Whalen, who was Jimmy Olsen through seasons 2 through 4 of Superman, Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, was born in 1974. And on September 8th, this is a big one, folks, the Super Friends cartoon show debuted on ABC TV and stayed on the air in one form or another until 1986. So that's a heck of a run for an animated property. And that's it.
Cool. So that was this week in history. Yeah, some, I guess September is the month where a lot of TV shows premiere or start because of, you know, it's you know, that period of the year where, you know, you get the premieres and the debuts of TV shows. So you got Lois and Clark, you had Super Friends, and The New Adventures of Superman, from a recollection looking at my calendar, all kicking off in early to mid-September in obviously different years.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much that's going to sustain and if we really are going to go to going to more of a Netflix model where they just film everything and releasing it all at once. Because we've gotten to the point where they're like mid-season finales now. So yes. It's interesting to see how that's shifting.
Indeed. And don't forget that the Superman homepage, we've always got the regular features that we post up. As I mentioned, the Superman on TV segment where you can see what's coming each week on TV, the Superman comic book listings, listing the Superman-related comic books out each week. About half hour after the show concludes tonight, the next issue or edition of the Speeding Bulletin video highlights video will be up on the website as well. And then tomorrow around the same time, you'll see the next segment of Scotty V's Great Scott segment. And don't forget the Super Trivia Quiz, the Super Secret Soundbite, the Big Question, all those segments that we regularly do at the Superman homepage, whether they're part of this program or just part of the website. They're all available at the website for you to participate in. And also, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and our Big Blue Report newsletter. So there's all the stuff happening around different mediums, different areas of technology for you to get involved with at the Superman homepage to stay in touch with everything that's happening in the world of Superman. Well, Michael, I hope you start to feel better this week and that you can get some rest after Dragon Con.
Yeah, I'm hoping not to sound so it not being all about the bass next week when we record with my voice.
Cool. All right, well, this show is nearly done. Before we do sign off, I'd like to thank everyone for listening in to Radio KAL Live. Once again, thanks to Mark, who called in to chat with us tonight, and to Alex and others who popped in and out of the Flash chat room during tonight's program. And a big thank you to you, my co-host, Michael Bailey. Thanks, Mike.
Pleasure as always, Steve.
A huge thank you to our sponsors and patrons, Tina Murray, Patrick O'Neill, and Stephen Wright. If you want to sponsor our show, please head to patreon.com/supermanhomepage, where you too can be a sponsor for as little as $3. A recording of this show will soon be available on the Superman homepage website. If you'd like to listen back to what took place, maybe you tuned in late, only caught parts of the program, well, you can listen to it in full on our website shortly. Michael and I will be back next week on Tuesday, September 12th at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Savings Time for another edition of Radio KAL Live. Look forward to talking with you then. Until then, be sure to check out supermanhomepage.com for all your daily news updates on everything surrounding the Man of Steel. I'm Steve Yunus. On behalf of myself and Michael Bailey, thanks for listening in to Radio KAL Live, brought to you by supermanhomepage.com.